The Mercosur trade deal, which was signed by Commission President Ursula von der Leyen before Christmas, December 6th, it's the biggest trade deal the EU and any other trading bloc have signed. But what happens next? Is the Irish government going to try and block it? Would this be considered as a protectionist stance? How would it be viewed in Europe? And what are the particular concerns that Ireland is trying to advance? Billy Keller, to you first on this. The government hasn't clearly answered as yet what stance it will take. They say they're examining the Mercosur trade deal on its merits. Do we even know at this stage if the Dáil will have the chance to ratify this deal, which is between a number, a block of South American, just to explain to anyone who's not familiar with it, a block of South American countries who've come together under the Mercosur umbrella and the European Union in, as I say, the biggest trade deal covering a block of, I think, collectively 800 million people?
Yeah, it looks like at this stage that the trade deal will be stripped out, so it will be trade and then there will be political agreements at a later stage. So therefore, from a European perspective, it won't require unanimity to agree a trade deal, so to be qualified majority. So that means, without getting too technical, you will find it difficult. You won't have a veto. One country won't have a veto in terms of blocking it as a trade agreement. So,
so step one, it goes to the trade ministers from the individual governments, and that's where this blocking minority would need to be found,
that's
amounting
correct.
To 35% of the population.
A minimum four countries, yes.
Yes.
And the difficulty at the moment is it seems to be the case that there's a weakening of opposition to it, from what I can gather. Without name dropping, but I was speaking with President Macron in Paris in advance of Christmas. We went down, we met him, and we spoke on the Mercosur agreement. And you know, there was real concerns by President Macron around the issue, how it was handled, not only in the context of agriculture itself, but the bigger political issue of it now removing that democratic mandate that should be sought by unanimity and also by going to national parliaments. And that is a significant issue. You know, we talk about Europe being removed from citizens. This is a clear example where you have a commission acting unilaterally without taking into account the needs of national parliaments and its broader obligations, basically, to the treaties in terms of trade. So there is genuine concerns there. From an Irish perspective, the big issue here really is the issue of beef and the impact that the additional 99,000 tonnes could have on beef in prices in Europe.
Which is, by one analysis, it equates to one Mercosur steak per EU citizen per year. I mean,
is
that being overplayed?
Well, it's not, because, I mean, at the moment, look, cattle prices are going very well. But, I mean, ordinarily we have a surplus of beef in the European Union. So, I mean, anything that increases pressure on prices has an immediate impact on agriculture. The other thing that is hard to explain is that we will be incentivizing the destruction of rainforests in the Amazonian basin. To produce soya, to produce grass, to produce beef, to import into the European Union, where we already have a surplus of beef. So I think we have to address that issue. And then how do we explain to farmers in the west coast of Ireland or anywhere else across Europe that they have to potentially reduce their herd numbers and their stock numbers to comply with our international obligations around the Paris Agreement?
Okay, so
they are the significant challenges. Okay. And the point I'm making is, once it goes beyond national parliaments and is removed from that, it's very hard in to have a real, meaningful, impactful debate around Mercosur, and that it would have a democratic mandate as well.
Okay. Regina Doherty, the opposition to the Mercosur trade deal seems to be based on environmental concerns, but primarily in France and in Ireland on the issue of beef. Now, I think an assessment done for the Department of Enterprise on this says that the Irish beef sector might see a 0.08% reduction in output as a result of this. I mean, are public representatives being played by a vocal beef lobby to oppose something that will have benefits elsewhere for agri-food, for pharma, for a number of other areas of the Irish economy that are actually worth far more?
No. So two things, if I could say. First of all, you're right insofar as that the EU absolutely needs this deal. It's going to be such a major game changer with regard to trade inward and exporting that the EU really, really needs it. But there are certain countries that the costs that are being asked to be paid by those countries are probably too high for all of the cost-benefit analysis that you can talk about. And it isn't just the 0.8% of downward production in beef in Ireland.
Well, 0.08%.
Sorry, yeah. Something zero. It's actually the downward pressure on beef prices that would impact our entire beef industry. So it's not small. And whilst we might, you know, be somewhat envious of how effective a lobby, you know, the Irish farmers are in Ireland, they don't lobby for no good reason. And so it's the downward pressure on beef prices that we need to absolutely...
Well, why didn't we hear as many voices being raised when there was a deal signed with New Zealand, for example, when there was increased quantities of sheep meat coming in? It's not as wealthy a sector as the beef sector, and yet there was virtual silence on it.
Because the fears obviously didn't exist that exist in our farming industry today. And so, OK, we need to look at, and Billy is right, that the new deal that has come back that was signed by the Commission only a number of weeks ago, we haven't seen the legal text yet. So I don't know whether the concerns that we would have had with around climate targets or whether that around the downward pressure on beef prices have been addressed yet. We need to see if they have. And if they haven't, well, then I think we need to really use our leverage here. And I know Ireland is only a small country. And when Billy talks about the percentages that's needed, the 35% of population that's needed, we come in at a very small tail end of that. But we have a significant amount of time now in the next 3 to 6 months to ensure that our voices are heard and that if you want our support, you have to address the issues, the legitimate issues that we have around downward pressure on beef prices.
Lynn Boylan, if, you know, the preferable option in dealing with other countries is sort of trade, not aid. Now, you were talking about Ireland's credibility with Latin America on the issue of Palestine. But if we're pulling up the fences and saying, we don't want to trade with you, we don't want to break down tariff barriers, how is that improving our credibility in that zone?
Because it's about changing the trading model, and which is not a race to the bottom. So this deal is not good for, I disagree completely with Regine in terms of the EU, because it's not just about the price of beef. We're all impacted, regardless of where we are on this planet, by climate change. This is going to accelerate climate change because of the rate of deforestation, particularly through beef and soy.
Does that not depend on who's in power in Brazil? Because the rate of deforestation under Lula has not been as bad as it has been under the Bolsonaro administration.
Its deforestation is still happening. We know that deforestation was postponed partly to facilitate Mercosur because the Brazilian government said it was a barrier to passing Mercosur. But there's other issues for the EU as well, apart from the price of beef, which is a genuine concern for farmers. The poultry quota has been increased from the first original negotiating text. The poultry is going to be increasing. The pork quota is also going to be increasing in. And the food that's coming in is being produced cheaper, and it's being produced cheaper because of lower working conditions, about land grabs from indigenous communities, and because they're allowed to use pesticides that farmers in the EU can't use. So in a 2024 audit by the EU, they found that the Brazilian authorities cannot guarantee that the beef coming in won't be hormone treated. And one of the hormones they use has been banned for 40 years within the EU. Also, 52% of the products that are authorised for maize are also banned within the EU.
Hang on a second, just to clarify though, the specific use of hormones is not allowed for in this deal. What is maybe a question that farmers have raised is the adequacy of the inspection rather than the actual use of hormones.
But the EU's own audit of 2024 said that Brazil cannot guarantee that the beef has not been treated by hormones.
There's a public health interest here as well for
all of us.
There was another audit by DG Sante, which is the health area, and they sort of said that it was very difficult to detect some of these growth hormones in beef once it was... You know, once they were given to cattle at a considerable time in advance, yet they will be entering the food chain, or there's a possibility of them entering the food chain, and they were concerned about that. Well, they shouldn't be. I mean, a lot
they
of real beef is...
Here.
They're already here because of the inability to detect it, and a lot of beef that comes in from South America is rejected. Look, I suppose it is about... You asked, is it protectionist? It is protectionist. I mean, let's be honest, but it's protecting the environment, because we're telling farmers that you have to farm in a particular way, you have to farm in a sustainable way, you can't rip out a hedgerow here, you can't take away scrub in this area,
you can't
reseed land as much as you'd like to. So we can't, on the one hand, make farmers farm in that way and tell them we're going to protect you, we're going to put measures in place, and that's because that's what our consumers want. They want food that they know is sustainably produced in a way that doesn't damage the environment, or at least has minimum damage to the environment.
You don't see any scope in signing this agreement that the conditions of trade and...
But we know the conditions. I mean, we signed a new trade association agreement with Israel around conditions of trade and adherence to conditions of trade. So we know conclusively that that doesn't matter. We spent the first part of the programme talking about it. We know that what the European Union signs doesn't matter a jot. I mean, the European Union's credibility on enforcing these type of measures when there are political issues at play is close to zero, I would have thought.
Well, I suppose on human rights, they have ceased. They have actually paused 15 trade agreements on human rights, which is why their position on EU-Israel is untenable. But in terms of enforcing, the language isn't there in the first place for the enforcement, even around the Paris Agreement.
Billy Keller,
it's not enforceable.
There's no heavy lifting being done by projections in that Department of Enterprise report that says there's a potential benefit of 1.4 billion in the manufacturing exports area and agri-food exports, 10 to 20 million there. And, you know, there's also things like whiskey, which, you know, is an export. Also areas like services.
Much of it manufactured with American corn.
I beg your pardon?
Much of it manufactured with American corn.
Which whiskey?
I mean, Irish whiskey does not need to be manufactured with Irish barley. I mean, a certain amount of it is. Some distillers do use Irish barley. Some of the bigger distillers don't. They import corn. So we could be importing corn from South America to make whiskey to export it back to South America.
But I suppose the manufacturing area, particularly, would say in pharmaceuticals, where there may be challenges down the track with the Trump administration coming in, that there may be new markets needed for things that are manufactured in Ireland, in the chemical and pharmaceuticals area, you don't see the economic benefits of this outweighing the disadvantages.
Well, I see the disadvantages will fall very heavily on one particular sector, and that's the difficulty with this particular trade agreement as I see it at the moment. Irish agriculture, primarily beef, but equally beyond that, I just think that the impact it will have in terms of our credibility as a European Union around sustainability, around encouraging farmers to change their work practices across Europe, and at the same time we will be incentivising through this particular trade agreement massive investment in continual destruction of the Amazonian rainforest to produce products that we already have a surplus of in Europe. I just think there should be a revisiting of that. I've spoken many times on it, and I don't see this particular trade agreement that was announced on the 7th of December being anything different in the context of what was already agreed previously.
But to oppose this trade agreement from an Irish point of view on a principled environmental basis, wouldn't it, to go back to what a sentiment you were expressing at the start of the programme, Regina Doherty, wouldn't Ireland be as well off getting its own house in order? It's looking down the barrel of 20 billion in fines for missing its climate targets by 2050.
Yeah, so every EU country has to get its house in order because we're far behind the targets that we set for ourselves, and there's lots of reasons for that.
Sure.
And
so is this more hypocrisy then?
No, but can I just, I somewhat maybe differ than colleagues here today with regard to the climate part of this bill or legislation. Now, I haven't seen the text, right, so it's only the narrative that
there.
Has been told of
the
me.
The text is there.
I haven't seen the legal text that has to be scrubbed and presented to us in such a way that the differences between what we had before Christmas and what we've received in the New Deal, I haven't seen yet. So if you have,
but all then, it says is that if one of the partners pulls out of the Paris Agreement, they don't have to pull out of the Paris Agreement.
The narrative that's been explained to me is that right now these countries are doing what they want. And what's been described here with regard to climate disrespect actions are happening on a daily, on a weekly basis. Bringing them into MacArthur...
The analysis, sorry, that you're being presented with, to be clear, is that
bringing them into MacArthur will have a legally binding agreement for them for the first time ever.
Will stamp some of this out.
Yeah, we'll provide a legal binding agreement whereby there will be ramifications if the targets are going to be set down in this deal are not met and are not lived up to. No, I don't know whether they will. Colleagues here have said that other, you know, countries ignore them. That might be true as well. So we need to see what the actual targets are, what the ramifications are going to be, what the timelines are, how the behaviour is going to be curbed before we can then say they're going to carry on and do what they're always going to do.
Okay.
And also, can I just say, if as Billy feels, that they are going to carry on and do what they're going to do to produce product that we already have a surplus of in the European Union, well, why would anybody be producing product for a market that already has a surplus?
Because
nobody's going to buy
more
it.
Cheaply.
But nobody's going to buy it already. Okay. And also, the beef in the target is already being consumed in the European Union. It's not that there's no, you know, South American beef coming. There is beef already being consumed.
A 20% tariff.
Yeah,
okay,
basically,
there'll still be, okay, still be a tariff outside the 90,000 tonnes under this. But, I mean, Michael McNamara, the difference between, say, for example, the issue you brought up of the human rights compliance conditions in the EU-Israel Association Agreement and the EU not acting robustly on that, The difference in this is there's a very vocal farming lobby that will be scrutinising this heavily if this were to go through, and would be insisting that there would be enforcement action taken were there to be any breaches of that. Do you not think that the difference of people sadly riding shotgun on the hard economics of this make it different to the human rights concerns in other trade agreements?
There's a vocal human rights lobby too in Europe, but the reality...
They don't have the same influence. They don't have the same economic clout.
The reality is that the farming lobby in Europe has nowhere near the influence that the German automotive industry has. And
when was the last time the human rights lobby in Europe shut down Brussels, burnt bales in the street, brought tractors, and had people, politicians and public representatives speaking off exactly the same speaking points in support of their position?
As long as the German automotive industry needs to sell cars to South America, whatever is going on with the environment in South America will be ignored by the European Union. And you can, and whatever clauses are in that will not be adhered to. Because we see that the European Union has an ability...
And it's why America sort of called the cars for cows.
Just before we leave this point, and I'll put this to you, Michael McLaren, and to you, Billy Keller, that was the analysis of the Brexiteers before the Brexit referendum. They said that the German car manufacturing industry will simply call Brussels ashore, Brussels will do its bidding, and Brexit will be the softest possible Brexit, with the UK dictating the terms based on its clout in terms of car purchases. And that didn't happen. No. Are you overestimating the clout of the German automotive industry, which is struggling at the moment?
I don't believe I am. I mean, I think they're hugely they're incredibly important to the German economy in particular, and they're more than, and it's more than just their actual influence. It's the symbolic influence of the German automotive industry to Germany as an industrial power in Europe, which is in decline.
Yeah, it is why Ursula von der Leyen railroaded this through.
But I mean, there's another factor to this which I think is damaging, and that is the timing of this. As the French government was collapsing, Ursula von der Leyen was getting on a plane to Montevideo. The timing of it is terrible. It really looks like acting in the interests of some parts of the European Union, geographically, and some parts of the economy, at the expense of others.
But at the same time, Billy Keller, the timing of it is fortunate in another regard, in that if the White House is going to play hardball on trade and tariffs with the European Union, the European Union has to look like it has other options and other markets and not entirely dependent on the US.
Well, look, Ian, there's no doubt there's going to be a change across the globe in terms of geopolitics and also in terms of economics and trade. And you can see that we probably will be entering a period of tariffs, more nationalistic views in terms of trade itself. You can see that already happening in the automobile industry in terms of concerns around Chinese cars flooding the American market, potentially flooding the European market. The bottom line here is, though, like, we have expressed grave concerns about the impact it will have on agriculture. I say this to the agricultural representatives across Europe when I speak to them here in Ireland as well, the IFA, the ICMSA, the ICSA, all of them. There is a huge lobby outside of the agricultural sector that want this trade deal. Let's be very clear. So you go to Germany, you go to Germany. I mean, we've changed policies already around the automobile industry in the European Parliament. So, I mean, the pharmaceutical sector. So there are many countries that have large export, particularly in engineering, that want this trade deal. That is a fact. And what we must try and do is try and isolate and minimise the potential impact that it will have on Irish agriculture on the environment.
Just to the two MEPs that are affiliated to government parties here, can you see the Irish government voting against this and aligning with France in outright opposition to try and veto this?
Yeah, I can. Because the fears are real. And if they're not addressed, well, then why would we vote for something that's going to have such a detrimental impact on
it? Before the 29th of November, it was expressed quite clearly by most parties that were campaigning in the general election that they would oppose it as it was.
Fine Gael in particular does seem to be watering that down.
I
appreciate Peter Burke is Minister for Enterprise, so he has a particular brief, but he in particular seems to be watering down Fine Gael's opposition too. But that's just might be one voice, and overall they may still take a decision to vote against
it. Minister McConnellan's language was a lot softer as well after the first council meeting.
His timing, he was particularly
they were emphatic in the debates that absolutely no to Mercosur, and then as soon as the signature is signed, they're saying, oh well, we'll have to review it now.
Because you have to see what's changed.
But
you can't say no when you don't know what.
No,
you don't know that. So you don't know that. And I think we're pragmatic enough to want to wait to see how the issues have been addressed and the concerns have been addressed.
One voice at a time.
More pork coming in has been confirmed. That's one change.
We're going to have a look at another issue after this. That's the issue of EU security issues around Ukraine, Russia. And, of course, we'll be probably talking a bit about the White House in the context of that. We're back in a minute with all of that.